This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Welcome to a Men in Blazers pod special. One of the most evergreen and popular podcasts we've ever released was a live night with Barry Hearn, in which a legendary producer, promoter, raconteur, and East End hard man revealed his 10 lessons of life to an enthralled audience. When we began to plan BlazerCon, the first call we made was to Barry, and we were thrilled when he quickly agreed to fly over and join us on stage to unfurl his sequel, The 10 Lessons of Life You Learn by Owning an English Football Club. As a holiday treat, we're elated to release the entire show as a pod special. And here it is, from the BlazerCon stage in Brooklyn, Mr. Barry Hearn.
Let's jump into it, because do you know what? I need to be enlightened. I need to learn not just about football, Davo. I need to learn about life. Do you know anyone?
Well, I've known our guest tonight, Rog, since I had hair, which is a tremendous number of years ago. I'm convinced he's one of the greatest sports entrepreneurs of our time. He imbues each of his investments, Rog, and he's in boxing, he's in snooker, he's in the darts, he's in football, he's in golf, he's in everything. He imbues each of his investments and life in general with what Jim Harbaugh would call an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. But what makes him so successful is his ability to match that enthusiasm with an equal dose of business savvy. He is a CPA, he's a chartered accountant. His special combination of passion and pragmatism was on full display at the mighty Leighton Orient, a football club he owned for almost two decades before stepping away last year and making a very good deal to sell it to an Italian. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you a man who, had he been born in America, would surely be too busy preparing for the next presidential debate to be at BlazerCon. The one and only Mr. Barry Hearn.
Big fella.
Oh, you're looking good, Bazza.
Well, I feel the energy in the room. Oh. Amazing, boys and girls.
Yes! Yes! Children, Barry, you might hear some bad language here this evening.
Children, become adults.
Barry, you are one of our most popular guests we've ever had on Men in Blazers. We're so excited to have you back, because you don't just talk about football, you teach us about life. When I first met Barry, he reached out, he shook my hand, and he did the most menacing handshake ever. You pulled me a little bit off balance, like an Aikido move. The most menacing handshake I've ever had. You said, that's how you win it. You say, you throw him off balance slightly with a little jerk. I still use that today, Barry. These are gifts.
The little jerk you still use. This is really worrying. This is starting off the wrong way.
You told me about that later. I mean, you came and did a sold-out show, Barry Hearn's 10 Lessons About Life. The rule, you will run a better business and a better life if you think poor, is now used by rich and poor businessmen in America alike. For those who don't know Barry, The Independent described him as the ubiquitous Hearn, whose interests range from bowls to boxing, snooker, darts, pool and poker. It said he couldn't pass a pie without sticking his finger into it. Your 10 rules to live by, they are in so many GFOP's cubicles. They're a code by which we live our lives. Tonight then, Davo, this is our sequel.
Yes, the 10 things you have learned from owning a football club, Barry Hearn. The things that you, a man who has I would say, controlled British sport appeared in front of the House of Lords. You had some colourful early days, let's just say in East London, and some of the businesses you may or may not have been involved in. But Barry, tonight we want to explore the 10 things that you learned from owning a football club.
Can I say why it's...
Yeah, a little, let's go a little preamble.
I would just say why it's so relevant, because you are appearing in one of the most important delegations, conferences of all time in the world of football. Okay? No. You already knew that when you bought a ticket.
It's a conclave, we like to call it, Barry.
But the difference is, what I'm going to teach you tonight, hopefully, is not relevant so much to some of the great and good that we'll be speaking to you over the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
These guys come from another world. I come from the street world. Right. So it's not about billion-dollar TV contracts. It's not about multi-million dollar sponsorships. It's not about superstars who prang their Ferrari but jump in their reserve Ferrari. I'm dealing with the real world. And why it's relevant is MLS and the clubs below MLS are the real world. And that's what we're going to be talking about.
Oh.
My views will be relevant to those. They will be completely insignificant to the billionaire fat boys that you'll be listening to over the next 24 hours.
How have you enjoyed meeting Crystal Palace chairman Steve Parrish?
Now, Steve is a great example of a club that came and achieved. He has my ultimate respect, because what they've done is they've come from nothing and become a major power. In the same way as that we in life hope that ourselves and our children's children will come from nothing and achieve. What I don't like is Bertie Big Bollocks.
I don't like him either.
That had the money to start with and never really did anything with it.
Yes.
So Steve Parrish and Crystal Palace, you'll listen to tomorrow. Listen well, because that's a lesson in success of something that's a positive achievement, not just for the football club, but for the community and the sport in general. Yeah. Something worth watching.
Come, Sons of Colf.
I should say, Bertie Big Bollocks is speaking at 10:30 here tomorrow.
Yeah. Martino, I'm worried about Martino running
fantastic.
That panel, though.
Let's dive in, because you've lived the dream, Barry. We all dream of owning the club that we loved as a child. You've lived that dream from 1995 to 2014 at Leighton Orient. Let's bang out that first law and dive on into your journey.
Barry's rule, number one, that he learned from owning a football club. Always remember why you bought the club in the first place. Explain, Barry Hearn.
Okay. A lot of people tell me, and I'm not experienced in this subject, that owning a football club is like having a mistress. It costs you a fortune and you have 3 good days a year. Now, with that in mind, you have to remember in your darkest moments why you did something and draw some satisfaction from that. So in the case of a football club, you look back and you ask yourself, why? Why did I get involved in this crazy business, lower league football? And the answer is because you were born to do it. Destiny dealt its hand. Fate has spoken. In my case, when I was 11 years old, I lived in a reasonably poor area. Well, it was so poor. Do you know what? I went to a quiz night one night, and the first question was, who are you looking at? That's how poor we were. But when I was 11, I was a big boy, and I wanted to go to watch football, because football's in the genes. It's like diarrhea. It runs in your genes. My mum and dad wouldn't let me go to watch a big club, the Arsenals, the Tottenhams, the Chelseas. They said, no, you can go to Leighton Orient because it's a small club and it's got a big family appeal and it's based in a community. You never forget your first football match ever. You don't forget the first one you watched, and you don't forget the first club you supported. That's yours for life. It doesn't go away. So you, whenever you buy a football club, and when things go bad, as they will do, all the time, you have to remember the reason why. And the reason why is because that's your club. That's lesson number one. Never forget that.
You had loved Orient since you were 11. 1995, the opportunity came for you to purchase it. I mean, right then, the chairman before you was a Rwandan coffee importer at a time when Rwanda was melting down, and he sold you the club for how much, Barry?
US equivalent, $4. This guy...
Actually, $3.69. he sold you it for £2.43. I'd love to have been in that negotiation. Going to start you at £1.50, and it drove you up.
I've been in negotiations with this man. I know how it got there.
I got to tell you, I think you paid over the price. They couldn't pay the milk bill. Morale was terrible.
It was falling to bits. And, you know, they came to see me in my office, and... Those of you don't know me, I run a, you know, sensationally successful business, as you'd expect. I mean, let's not sit on the fence here.
No, it is a sensation.
I've been having it off for 30 or 40 years. And this guy came to see me and said, look, he said, I'm a Rwandan coffee man. I'm worth $300 million, or I was last week. And then the Rwandan people decided to have this terrible conflict. And being the sensible guys they were, they burnt the only asset the country had, coffee plantations. And his £200 million, £300 million, disappeared. And he could no longer afford the losses of the club. So he knew that in my past, I was a Leighton Orient supporter. And he came to me and said, would you take the club over? And he did a famous TV documentary, which you should all watch, called Yours for a Fiver. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. Because he just wanted to get out. And I looked at the accounts, and it's losing $1 million a year, and I'm thinking, I've got a nice life. What do I want to buy a business that loses $1 million a year? He said, because of the potential. Do you know potential is a very, very difficult word? Look it up in the dictionary. There's no actual definition of potential. It's hot air, isn't it? It's perception. But then, nevertheless, I went to the ground. I walked down the steps to the ground, and all I could think of, I used to stand over there when I was a kid. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And there's this derelict ground losing $1 million a year with no assets that couldn't pay the milk bill. And suddenly our chairman and said, I can see the potential in this place. And of course, everyone talks about the $3 or $4 it cost to buy the club. They don't talk about the $3 million they owed everybody else. But it was a move that was made for the right reason. In your life, there'll be certain times and certain decisions that you would make at a certain time that perhaps you wouldn't make in other times. And that's because life moves forward, doesn't it? And there are certain things that are relevant to you and important. And I think this came at a time for me as a person and my own development where this was important to make a statement of where I was, who I was, where I came from, and what values I had. So that's the one, that's why I got involved.
Love it. Okay. This brings us perfectly to rule number two. So now you've bought the club, you've taken on the debt, you've seen the potential.
You're $3.69 down.
But rule number two, Barry Hearn's rules of what he learned by owning a football club. Do not leave your brain in the club car park.
That's a parking lot, America.
So many sensible people, from the moment they acquire their loved one, their football club, because it features far above the wife and children, if you hadn't noticed. So many people that I've admired in the past that have built businesses from nothing and been supremely successful, the moment they've got involved in football, as they park their car, they leave their brain in the car. In fact, what they should be doing is taking the rules that they learned from a successful business and applying those same rules to a football club. You can't lose the emotion, but you have to treat it with respect, and that means treating it in the same way as you would a successful business. Football is littered with dozens upon dozens of wealthy people who have hemorrhaged their entire family wealth on chasing the dream. Now, that whilst that might sound attractive to certain fans, they don't have to answer to their wife why they've lost all their family money. And the secret of this is keep sensible. Despite everything, you have to live in the real world.
When you bought the club, I went back to the newspapers and you told everyone, I don't know much about football. I know about business. I don't know a lot about football. Football, as you've said, it's packed with lowlives, sharks, agents. I mean, just designed to, my old English teacher had a phrase, bullshit baffles brains. I mean, it's packed full of individuals who know that. And how did you know who to trust? How to forge allies without angles? How did you work that out? Because you are an outside Tony Pulis as a manager. He divides the world into football people and non-football people. And you would have been a non-football person.
Totally. I knew nothing whatsoever about football. I know about business. I know about passion. I know about enthusiasm. I know about hard work. And I don't know shortcuts. Things don't happen overnight. And I think one of the issues that you're talking about over the next 24 hours, how quickly is Premier League going to be bigger than NFL? How quickly can it happen? You don't put a time frame on these things. You adopt a sensible approach. Children grow up. You can't make a baby into a teenager overnight. They develop. And sport and business is exactly the same. It will develop at the pace that the market determines. So with all these other guys and with all these things going on, you really have to concentrate on running a business. Be terribly cynical. I know it's horrible to say because we think everyone in the world is lovely. They're not. Most of them are bastards. Right. So, I trust
I love people.
No one. I'm not sure I trust me. I check everything. I doubt everyone. I'm a horrible, cynical bastard. But you know what?
Let's hear it for Barry.
I'm never disappointed. It's so refreshing when you do come across someone who is genuine because they're so rare. Take away your family. Who do you really trust on one hand? It's scary because it's no one. God alone is the only person, and I've got to wait till I go upstairs to find out even he's real.
Okay, Barry, rule number three. It's connected to rule number two and rule number one. Make sure your heart and wallet stay in a different place. That's, by the way, great advice, not just from owning a football club, that's for life in general.
For sure. Now, when you're in love with yourself, as I am every day of my life, just in case you hadn't noticed, which is why I come to New York with these two lovely, crazy guys and want to share time with you lovely people, I'm the one who's winning, not you. I'm loving every second. When you buy a football club, suddenly, you imagine the scene now. You grow up in a development area, you go and see a football club, you fall in love with a club. What's your dream when you're 11 years old? Do we have dreams? I had dreams. I wanted to be heavyweight champion of the world. I was so gutted when I found out I couldn't fight. But then you start watching soccer, football. The dream sometimes at the back of your head is like you start off from a poor area, you think, I want a big house. I want that house on top of the hill. I want to have money. I don't want to be poor. I want to go and get things. I want to be materialistic. And the ultimate dream, I like to own my own little football club. So suddenly I find out later in life, I actually own the football club that I love. It doesn't matter if it's Manchester United or Leyton Orient. It's the principle, it's the passion, it's the enthusiasm, it's your life. It's when you wake up in the morning and you want to taste success. And I'm a competitive person, in case you hadn't noticed. I like to win. Coming second is great in certain circumstances, not in the business of sport. You want to be a winner. The big danger is, how much are you going to commit? You've got to somehow have the discipline of keeping your wallet away from your heart. Because if your heart determines what you spend, then you have lost your rules. And the whole basis of how you've become the person you've become has been lost. You have your rules of life and you have to adopt them, irrespective of the love that's involved. Do we love our children? Of course we do. Do we want them to grow up to be special people, proper people? Yes, we do. We want that even more than we love them. The same applies to a football club. You want it to be a standalone, proper, self-sustainable business that deserves and earns respect. Keep the wallet away from your heart.
What was the most difficult check you ever had to write owning the football club?
There has been so many difficult checks to write. But my favourite one was one of my early managers, who I loved to death, a guy called Tommy Taylor, was a salt of the earth. He would have people up against walls, which I thoroughly approve of. Especially agents and footballers. But he had a penchant for signing players. Now, those of you that don't know too much about football, let me inform you, there are 11 players in a team. At one stage at Leighton Orient, I had 38 players under contract. I can't for the life of me think why. Maybe my heart and my wallet were beginning to merge. But I love Tommy Taylor, and he would say to me, "Governor, we just need one more." I'm like, how many of these f***ers are playing? And he came to me once, and he said, "There's a midfielder in Northampton Town who would add a lot to our team." I've got 17 midfielders. He said, "His name is Dave Martin. Back me on this one, Chairman. Please, I'm begging you." "Oh, how much is he?" "Okay, we'll buy him. We'll sign him." He came out for his first game. I looked at my wife. I said, "This geezer is shot." In the trade, we say he has no legs. Now, he's not disabled in any way. It's just his legs have stopped working properly. Mainly due to his age, which was extremely old. And I've just signed him on a 2-year frigging contract. And I watched him the week after, and he was much the same. And I pulled him into my office and I said, "Dave, welcome to Leighton Orient." He said, "It's lovely to be here." I said, "I'm not surprised you find it lovely to be here, because I don't think there's another club in the country would employ you." And he said, "What does that mean?" I said, "I'm going to give you 1 year's salary today instead of 2 years' salary over the next 2 years, and you're going to f*** off." And I absolutely hated the writing the cheque, but I felt it was the right thing to do at the time.
Okay. I can't wait for this one. Barry's rule number 4. Think outside the box, and I do not mean the penalty area.
Okay, when you run a business, too many people look at the blacks and whites of business, and business is sometimes grey. You can't be definitely right-handed or left-handed. Sometimes you have to have a little bit of ambidexterity. In the business of football, you have to look outside the box. And when I say that is, you're looking to run a proper business and you've got to decide it's not just about football. When you run a lower league club, and this is a particular reference to the MLS and the teams underneath the MLS, you have to look at the community. The club is a statement of the community it represents. You never, ever leave that on the table. This is the future of American football. When you're growing something, you don't just plant a seed. You put manure around it, or you put fertilizer around it. You encourage the growth. So to think outside the box is to say the football team is what people come to see today. But what we're interested in is the legacy that we are going to leave tomorrow. That is the fundamental reason why you invest in your own people. I understand MLS bringing in these aging superstars on huge money from England. And I think it's wonderful that you are supplying them with their retirement fund for a year of their life. They will also attract a considerable media interest, which in the short term will do a job for you. But that is a short-term philosophy. So it's instead of, do you visit a hooker or do you get married? Do you want a quick fix or do you want a long-term commitment?
My view
is the long-term commitment is what works. So you have to understand the sustainability and the spread into the community to build the fans of tomorrow. The fans of today are already committed, but you need to invest in the future, and that's thinking outside
hooker,
the box.
Long-term hooker.
And why is that so outside the box?
Because
in lower league football. Do other chairmen not feel like that,
No,
Barry?
Because people look to say, how can I improve season tickets this year?
Hooker.
How can I improve sales this year?
Hooker.
How can I improve programs and catering?
Hooker.
Yeah.
What we've got to be looking at is, how do I get more people interested in my product? How do I get the new audience, the new youngsters, the new followers of this sport? The existing people are already convinced. We know it's a great game. But there is, especially in America, a whole new audience to educate. And people don't give enough attention to their own people in their own towns and their own roots. And that has to change.
Yeah, there's long-term relationship, there's hookup, and there's pies. Question sent in from a great friend of the pod, a really wonderful man. At that, Josh Cale.
Oh, Josh Cale.
And he says,
since the beginning, Josh Cale.
He says, let me ask you something outside of the box. He said, Barry Herb, can you buy an MLS team? No relegation, Barry.
I'm not necessarily a fan of no relegation, but I think the American franchise system is something that is quite peculiar to America in some ways, but is spreading around the world with the IPL cricket, Caribbean cricket. I like the cut and thrust. I like, in a way, you almost develop a sadistic love of being kicked in the nuts. You know, when you've had a bad season and it's all gone pear-shaped, don't you think you should be punished? Or should you say it was... In my life, if I make horrendous decisions, which I do occasionally, I get punished for them. And the punishment stops me making the same horrendous decisions the next time. You know, when I used to try and be heavyweight champion of the world, and when I found out I couldn't fight, the reason was I found out that I loved hitting people, but I hated it when they hit me back. And I realised it wasn't for me. And I think the only education is punishment. Punishment is, at every level, a great education for people because it stops you making the same mistake. You know? I can't say, to me, mind is basic. You know, is sport business or is sport sport? It's a big question, isn't it? Because obviously sport is business, but the pureness of sport is the sport itself. And that's a difficult balance sometimes to come to. So, would I buy an MLS team? No, I'm coming up for 68. I know I only
but
look,
we spoke
you know,
about
young,
it once.
But
we spoke about it once.
We was going to form one. We was going to buy New York City, weren't we?
We were going to buy York City. No, we were going to, years ago, we were going to buy York City.
Yeah, that's a town in England.
And we were going to rebrand them New York City and have them play in England and in America. And then we talked about doing Las Vegas Orient.
Yeah, yeah.
We were going to take Orient to Las Vegas.
We must have been so pissed that night.
It's likely.
But I think now, you know, for me, I enjoy being with you guys and everything is, I don't think I've ever been happier in my own life, personally. You know, I've got nice thoroughness of thought, cleanliness of mind. I don't really want to do anything else anymore other than just carry on enjoying myself. And the idea of taking on new challenges, I think, is for young people, people with more vibrancy that older people have, inevitably. You know, look at my son who's running boxing now in Europe. I'm doing unbelievable things.
Look him up.
Unbelievable things for the sport, changing the entire demographic of sport. And he's so much better than I was. He's a different class operator. As young people today have learned from the master and then taken things to another level. And they're the type of people you need. You don't need to go back to the old farts. You need a new breed. You need the next generation of superstars, you not the old guys.
You need Bertie Big Bollocks.
Everyone needs Bertie Big Bollocks at some stage in their life.
Okay, this is interesting to me because of what you did when you acquired Leighton Orient. Rule number 5, when it comes to grassroots, make sure you own the grass. If you go to Leighton Orient football ground, if you're fortunate enough to be there, there are blocks of flats within yards of each corner flag developed by Mr. Barry Hearn and built there. They have a great view of the pitch.
Now, this sort of overlaps over point number 8, but we'll just... It's a little bit of thinking out the box, and it's a little bit of point 8, don't let the tail wag the dog. So, you have an asset. In business, you maximise your assets. At every stage, you work to maximise what God gave you or what you borrowed. In the case of poor people. So, with Leighton Orient, yes, we had a derelict stadium, but a fabulous playing surface. I walked round there one day and thought, this place is finished. It's falling to bits. We rent it from the council. They're going to charge me a load of money for a building that is actually going to be condemned fairly soon. So I went to the council and said, I'm leaving the area. And they said, you can't. I said, why not? They said, well, you do all the community work and we can't afford it. And we reach 200,000 kids every year, which is a great job by some unbelievable people. I said, well, the only way I'll stay is if you sell me the ground. Now, the council in East London, their politics are slightly to the left of Stalin. My politics, on the other hand, are slightly to the right of Genghis Khan. So, as you can imagine, there was a very difficult atmosphere in the room. Basically, they hated the rich bastard that was standing in front of them. And they said to me, come back in a month and we'll discuss it and think about it. I went back a month later. They said, we've had a thought and this is non-negotiable. Non-negotiable, you capitalist son of a bitch. We will sell you the ground for $500,000. Well, I nearly fell off my chair because obviously they didn't know any understanding of what the ground was worth. And I said, in the spirit of friendliness that exists in this room, I won't even negotiate that figure. And I gave him a cheque for $500,000 on the same day. 7 months later, when I looked at the grass that I now owned, I thought, with the crowds we get, no one actually sits in the four corners. So those four corners are, in a business sense, totally redundant to my needs. It seems a shame not to put four great blocks of flats on those four corners. And I went out and sold them for $16 million. The council went completely berserk because it was only 8 months after they'd valued it at $500,000 and demanded money from me with menacing overtones, which was hilarious. And because I studied menacing overtones in another life, which is another Men in Blazers evening completely. I think I'm past the 7-year statute now, so I can tell the
truth.
You
can tell everything.
And with that money, we built a new stadium. So where we say that we didn't have to borrow anything, we ran a sustainable, proper business. We spent every single penny and some more. We built a health centre within it for the local community. We built a pharmacy. We built a college row for the kids to study IT. We integrated all of that out of one dumb move by a load of self-preservation counsellors that didn't deserve to be in their job in the first place. Thank God they were so bad, because we gained good out of it. So the answer is, even when you look at something, make sure you own it. When you own it, you have flexibility and opportunity, and that's all you need if you're smart enough to take advantage of people who are not.
I should note that you also built one of the best poker clubs in East London.
Yeah, we one corner, we built a little thing called the Poker Den. Anyone play poker? Yeah. I used to play a lot of poker. And we had this amazing night every Friday, live on TV. Why not? Someone's got to pay. And it was the time of the poker boom. And you paid $10,000 on a Friday night, and the winner went home with $50,000. And it was one of those things. It was in a studio that looked like it was a derelict warehouse. And the great thing was, as you walked in, you got body searched by bodyguards to make sure you had no guns and knives on you. It made the whole TV program. It was surreal. It's got absolutely nothing to do with my 10 lessons in life, but we thought we'd throw it out there anyway. Catch it up on YouTube, The Poker Den. You'll love it. It was wild. I won one.
Okay, Barry's rule number 6. Reality is not such a bad place to live in. Discuss.
This comes down to, once again, the Bertie Big Bollocks scenario, isn't it? You know, these people that think they can swan in, buy something and not put something back. The reality is in life exactly the same as sport. When you earn a salary, generally you spend your salary or you may save a bit for future, but you live within your means, don't you, most people? Because we have to, we have no choice. Who is there to help us? No one. And that same argument must apply to sports clubs, especially in America. Because if you build an unsustainable business, the loser is not you, because presumably you've got enough money not to worry about it. The loser is the damage it does to the sport in terms of perception. The more people that invest money into football clubs that don't make it into a sustainable business, the less likelihood that that sport will be successful in the long run, because people will be frightened away from it. Whereas the alternative is to build a sustainable business in the real world where we all live. And that business can grow not as fast as it does with borrowed money or foreign money or money that may disappear again, but local money, people that care about what they do, people that feel for the sport, you develop a sustainable business that benefits everyone at the right pace. And the right pace in America is 10 years. You're 10 years away from building a sustainable football business. Try to do it too early, and it will come back and bite you on the bum. You have to make sure your business principles are in place first. Sustainability is key.
You love reality more than I do. You love reality, but I read an interview where you were asked, which manager do you most admire in football? Do you remember who you chose?
Arsene Wenger. And let me tell you the reason why. Arsene Wenger may not. I think this year Arsenal win the Premier League. Now, I don't care. I don't care at all whether they do or they don't. But what I will tell you is that Arsenal as a business model have become and are becoming, over the next few years, the richest club in the world. And they've done it with a mixture of not getting carried away with overpaying for big name players that may not necessarily deliver, by looking at really quality talent that's coming in at the right price. I mean, in our life, do we buy a car at double what it says on the windscreen? No, we actually try and get a discount on the price it says on the windscreen. So why do we don't adopt the same with the profusion of talent that exists in the world? And the reason is because of peer pressure, media pressure, fan pressure, and you do things that you wouldn't do in your normal life. Arsene Wenger, despite the criticism of Arsenal not winning major trophies for so many years, has actually followed instructions from his board. Do you know why? Because he's a paid employee. When people work for me, I'd rather like to think they do what I tell them. Because if not, I don't really know why I'm paying my salary to start with. Now, I'll listen to them, I'll take their opinions, I'll move ahead. Arsene Wenger has created a business model built together by some very bright people that have given the Arsenal Football Club the most wonderful stadium, paid for. Not given to them, like West Ham.
You're not bitter. You're not bitter. Moving forward. Moving forward.
I told you I'm cynical. I'm not bitter. But I'm also a little shade of twisted as well.
Okay, Barry, rule number 7. If you are good enough, you're old enough.
In every walk of life, and sport is no different from anyone else, it's about ability. Age is not necessarily a criteria for ability. And too often, in too many places and too many areas of life, we look on people as young people and they don't get the opportunity that their talent deserves. This is particularly true in football. What we're seeing in England especially, and this is a warning sign for America, is we're not seeing enough local talent produced. Despite the wealth of the Premier League, and Richard Scudamore, who used to work for me on the Football League, is a great, great man, and he's done some fabulous jobs. Development within England is way down the pecking order, whereas our television income is the biggest in the world. We are not producing homegrown talent. Why? Because we're not investing in it, and when we find homegrown talent, we're not giving it the opportunity because of the fear factor of fan pressure, media, is the kid ready for it? In my life in boxing especially, you know if someone's ready, but they won't find out themselves until you put them in the limelight, until you give them that opportunity. So one of the frustrations I had with manager after manager was the fear factor of giving a youngster his chance. And I thought in my lunacy that that was the reason we were there to start with. Not just to create local stars, but to give our local players, our local kids, our kids, the chance to achieve their dreams. Because isn't sport about achieving your dreams? Or is it just about making an extra few dollars? You have to be brave. You have to be fearless. You have to be ruthless. Do you know the worst thing in a football club is when the kids have finished their apprenticeship years and they're 17 or 18 years old, and you have to bring him in the office and say, son, you ain't good enough. This kid has spent 6 years, 5 years of his life dreaming of being a professional footballer. I found that the hardest job I've ever done in my whole life, because I felt I was taking away the dreams of someone. But I was doing it for a reason. They weren't good enough at our level. But there were lower levels, and you encouraged them to take that opportunity. But we must never, ever be fearful of giving our own people their chance. Be honest with them afterwards, but certainly give them that opportunity. If they're good enough, they're old enough.
Who's the best player you ever developed? Whether or not they made it or not, who's the best player you ever developed?
I mean, in a sports world now, for most of you don't know, I have 660 event days per year. So there isn't a day where there isn't events. So I look on the kids in every sport I deal with, whether it be golf, whether it be darts, whether it be boxing, and I get so much pride when they do make it, and very few do. You know, there's only one president of the United States, isn't there? You know, they're so tough out there, it's so competitive. So many kids want to live the dream. My job is to give them their opportunity in sport, and their job is to have the ability to succeed and the dedication. So today I'm celebrating, and I'm digressing now, if you'll forgive me. So today I'm celebrating that the greatest heavyweight boxer I have ever seen in my whole life, better than Lennox Lewis, better than Mike Tyson, signed a new 3-year deal with me. And his name is Anthony Joshua. And this boy, and Men in Blazers, you've got an exclusive here because you're going to go away and remember the name. This is a phenomenal athlete.
And the sound it makes when he hits someone, Barry, talk to us about the sound.
When you play golf with a golf pro, they hit a ball, it makes a different noise than when I hit a ball. It's called timing, you know? Different noise. When Anthony Joshua hits someone, you gasp. It makes a different noise. 14 fights, never heard the bell for the third round yet. Boxes, and you'll be seeing him in America sooner or later, but the American networks don't really understand boxing. Give them time. So Deontay Wilder, WBC champion, American, good lad, would not go three rounds. Klitschko, excellent fighter, would not go five rounds. So that's what I get out of sport, to watch. You can't imagine the journey of watching this kid and walking in at Vegas. Yes, it makes millions of dollars. I've already got millions of dollars. What I need is the adrenaline rush. And the there is no greater adrenaline rush than seeing a kid take his chance, whether it be on a football field, whether it be in a boxing ring, whether it be the golfers that come through our tours. This is our job to do. And it's not nicely. I've spent all my life chasing money, all my life wanting to be wealthy. And you get to a certain age where, you know what, you're closer to God and you realise there's other things as well. The adrenaline keeps me going, keeps me working. But what I'm seeing is, I'm seeing people achieve their dreams in the same way I wanted to achieve mine and the same way I wanted my children to achieve theirs. And I'll tell you what, you sleep well at night.
Rule number 8, never let the tail wag the dog.
Now, most dogs need a tail. And the tail actually does a lot of things. You know, if the dog's happy, it wags it. So a tail is a very important part of a dog. In the same way, fans are the most important part of a football club. We all talk about the multi-million pound TV deals, the sponsorships, but without the fans being there, without the atmosphere they created, the whole thing would be just sad, wouldn't it? When you watch on TV and you see a game and you see empty stands.
You see a lot of blocks of flats.
You see a lot of blocks of flats. But your perception is this is not a big game because there's no fans there. But there is a danger. The fans have demands. The fans want more than anything else success. And they don't give a monkey. Sorry, monkey means they don't really care much. It also means 500 quid. But that's rhyming slang. Never mind. I won't bore you with it. I'm beginning to ramble, children.
That's good.
So, what does monkey rhyme with?
I don't know what it rhymes with. It's monkey. There's a monkey in a bottle and a carpet. I mean, it's different money. Don't go there. Don't go there. We could be here all night. But what I'm saying is, you've got to understand, when a fan buys his ticket, he becomes an expert in everything to do with that particular football club. He knows who you should buy, what you should be paying. He knows everything about ticket prices and economics of football. Of course, none of this is true. When we talked about that thing about going to the council and they said, give me $500,000 and you can buy the ground, which turned our club upside down and made us into a viable, semi-viable business with a proper asset base. The ground was so important, that acquisition, that when I sold the club, I kept the ground. I like to give them a bit of protection because you never know. I'm cynical. You don't know who you're selling to, do you? They might turn out to be a wrong one. So they're protected forever. When we had that offer from the council, the week after, I had a meeting of supporters in Leighton Town Hall, that prestigious building somewhere in the East End of London. And about 800 people turned up. And I was giving them an update on where the club was, how I saw the future, and I wanted to get some reaction from them. And I said to them, look, you know, we have a derelict ground. We have an opportunity to buy it. The club has no money, so needless to say, Bazza has got to pay. But let me have a vote amongst you fine 800 supporters. We can either buy the ground for this unbelievable cheap price, which will continue our presence in this area and sustain our football club. Or I could buy a new centre forward who may score 20 goals a year for you. Let's have a show of hands. Rough count, 85% voted for signing the new centre forward. And I said to them at that meeting, this is the reason why, as much as I love you, as much as I need you, as much as I respect you, you will never have any say whatsoever in the running of this football club.
Yeah.
A football club is the players, it's the owner. Steve Parrish, the Crystal Palace owner, says the most important thing about owning a club is to always know that your ownership is temporary and you're just holding on to it for the next owner, the next generation. Yeah. Does the manager, and I think we know your sense of what a manager can do and what a manager can't do. What I wanted to talk about, life advice, Barry. How do you sack a manager? Take us inside your office.
Sometimes it's bloody lovely. Sometimes it's the hardest thing in the world. So I bought the club and I had a manager in place who I quite liked. I thought he was quite passionate until I watched him on the training ground and he tackled a youngster from behind and nearly broke both his legs. And I thought, this man's a bully. I don't like bullies. He's out. 10 days he lasted. Very nice. Didn't really know him, but it was the right decision. And then you give people chances and you make mistakes. You know, I knew very little about football. My first manager I got from Tottenham, he was in charge of their youth team, very nice young man, way out of his depth. 18 months later, you know, he was so broken by results that he actually enjoyed being sacked. And I phoned Tommy Taylor, who used to play for me at centre-half at Leighton Orient, went on to play for West Ham. Big old lump. Was running a pub somewhere. Great grounding, isn't it? And I thought, you know, he'd done so. I phoned him up, I said, Tommy, you know, do you fancy managing Leighton Orient? With me, because I'm very simplistic, there are certain words that people say that they have me. You know, what was that film when she said, you have me when you said hello, you know? Sometimes someone can say one line to me and I think, that's my man. And he said to me, how much do I want to manage Leighton Orient? He said, I'll walk down the motorway. I thought to myself, oh, he's my type of geezer. And I stuck with him for about 5 years and, you know, results didn't go well. And I'll tell you what, I think I was the most emotional I've ever been when I pulled him in my office at my house and I said, Tom, I think it's your time. And he went, I thought he'd say that. You know, results have not been good. And I was choked because he was my type. And you want sometimes you want people to succeed so much, but you can't affect results. Your heart, you know, you're useless. You can support, you can give him money, you can buy players. And sometimes God just decides it ain't going to be your season. And then, you know, I had a couple more. It was quite nice because I was interviewing managers after Tommy. And my people do all the early interviews and they give me the last two or three. And I make the call. And this particular job, I had two interviews left. One, a guy called Williams, who came to my office, suited and booted. He looked terrific. He'd obviously researched the entire team. He knew every position of every player. He knew all the grounds and all the teams we were playing. And in an hour, I think it was the best interview I'd ever heard. I thought he was a little bit boring, but he was good. And then the next one, and you may know this guy, was a guy called Ian Holloway. The Maverick manager that took Queen's Park Rangers up and, you know, did a great job with Blackpool, etc., etc. He came in, no jacket, no tie, open neck shirt. His first words were, "All right, Baz, what's the crack?" And we had an hour, and I've got to tell you, I was super inspired, super inspired. I thought, this is a man, I want him in the dressing room. He's inspiring me. I can't even play football. And at the end of an hour of the most funniest interview ever, he knew nothing whatsoever about my team. He knew nothing about division, but the passion was unbelievable. And I said to him at the end of the hour, Ian, why are you here? He said, well, I'm out of a job, Gov, aren't I? And I said, Ian, this job pays $150,000 a year. Oh, mate, he said, I couldn't accept more than $400,000. I said, I know that, so let me ask you the question again. Why are you here? He said, I had nothing else to do. I fancied meeting you. He then proceeded to go around all the office, chatting up all the girls. He was a star, but he was out of our league. And reality, you have to live in the real world. The other guy I gave the job, Grant Williams, lovely, lovely man, failed miserably, although he was absolutely perfect and lasted a year. And then the bald man, Russell Slade, came in, the best manager I've ever had. I only ask for people to be honest. I don't expect people to be geniuses at my level. Just be honest. Work hard and be honest. God will provide the rest and we'll make the most of it. I'm not expecting to find the next Arsene Wenger. I'm not expecting that. What I'm expecting is people to have passion and belief and then just give it your best shot. Because I give my best shot every day in everything I do, every hour of every day. But I'm not perfect, despite what I think about myself.
Okay, Barry, rule number 9. Never forget the good times. There are too few to forget.
Why are we in this crazy business? Why do we go up? Why do we spend nights not sleeping? And all the success I've had in various sports, why is it football, the one sport that's never going to change my life financially, why should it hurt so much to lose? And why should it be so unbelievably brilliant when you win? Where's this trigger, this little G-spot of entertainment? I just don't understand it. But it's there, and it's what brings you here. Now, put yourself in the position of the drama of what happens if. What happens if we get relegated to the conference? That's doomsday language. We had years of being right at the bottom and winning the last two games to get out of jail, because you disappear in the conference, disappear. And then suddenly you hit some form and you're chasing up the league and the dream lives on. Could this be our year? Could we get out of Division 2? And then suddenly it's the last match of the season. Can you know what this is like? A win, the last match of the season, a win away from home against a team that needs to win to avoid relegation, where it's packed out, where you can't get a ticket. 90 minutes of torture. And when it goes right for you, the joy is unspeakable. And what happens when the FA Cup comes along? You dream of getting into the third round because that's when the big boys are there. And we want to play the big boys. We want to kick some arse big time. And suddenly you draw Arsenal at home. Arsenal at home. And then you think to yourself, we're going to get killed. I went in the dressing room before the Arsenal game. I said, boys, these geezers are good. They're going to probably kill you. I said, so let me give you some advice. I don't know anything about football, but they're quick. So kick them hard and kick them early. Slow these bastards down. And the biggest killer in business and the biggest killer in sport, you know what it is? One word, complacency. The day you think you're the nuts is the day you're disappearing down the toilet. Complacency in business is a killer. When you think you've made it, that's the beginning of the end. You have to drive yourself every day, every hour to be better. And the same in sport. And we played Arsenal. And Arsene Wenger fielded a pretty strong team. And they're 1-0 up at half-time. So what did he do? Take a few boys off. Rest the big names. Numpty. Because in the 88th minute, every single person that was there, their children and their children's children, will talk about that day. And the great thing was, we drew. Because all we were thinking about was reality kicks in, and if we go to the Emirates, we're going to make a frigging fortune. Because we get 50% of the gate money.
How quickly did you realise that?
Instantly. And the funny thing was, My life is all about family and all about sport and family. And we're sitting there. My wife is just the most wonderful, wonderful woman. She's quite scary, but she's wonderful. But she is the rock of our family, and we're all petrified of her. In my life, I've met a lot of very difficult people, and I can honestly say the only person in the world that's ever frightened me is my wife. So you imagine the scene. It's 1-1. There's 2 minutes left. I'm here. My wife is there. My son is there. The clock ticks down. They hold up 3 minutes of injury time. I've never prayed so much in my life. And I do pray a little bit. After about 2.5 minutes, my son stands up, and I will not say the language because it is my language is normally bad, but this is terrible. My son has shouted out to the referee, "Blow the blub 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 whistle, you blub 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 blub." And my wife has looked at him and gone, "Edward, sit down." And Edward's gone, "Sorry, Mum." He's blown the whistle, the place has gone mad. It's gone crazy. And all we've done is draw. So we go to the Emirates and there's 60,000 people there. The great thing is about family. My father-in-law is 88. He's been a gooner since he was 7. Right? He comes from North London. My family's from East London, but he's the poor side. My father-in-law has never spoken to me in 50 years, hardly at all. He's a very quiet bloke. He was a factory worker. He's a nice guy. I worked hard, enough, you know. We're in the ballroom at the Arsenal Football Club at the Emirates, the bloody ballroom, right? And my father-in-law came up to me and said, "I know I don't talk to you much, but I want to say thank you." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I've been a gooner since I was 7. He said, "I never dreamed in my life I would ever be in the ballroom at the Arsenal." I said, "Fred, make the most of it, son, because we probably won't be back." But I said, "Fred, what I want you to do, I want you to walk around this gaff and I want you to steal everything." He came out, knives and forks in his pocket, toiletries, serviettes. We got smashed 5-0. Who gives a f***?
Barry, we've got 10 minutes to go. We've still got one more rule, your final rule. Barry's rule number 10, what he learned by owning a football club. Recognise your sell-by date.
We've all got egos, haven't we? We all think we can go on forever, and life actually doesn't work like that. You know, we'd like to think, but all of us, we're going to get the call, and it's our time to go. But in business, it's not necessarily a health thing. Sometimes you just feel there's a sell-by date in every product and every person in sport. Great players become redundant because they get old or their legs go, like we said about Dave Martin. And chairmen lose, not necessarily enthusiasm, but sometimes they remind me of Fraser against Ali when Eddie Futch cut his gloves off and wouldn't let him go out for the last round and said, "You've had enough, son." And sometimes you have to be a big enough person to look in the mirror and say, "I've had enough, it's time for someone else." It's a tough call to make when it's passionate, when it's your own. But I had a situation where we nearly achieved the impossible. As a small club with the smallest budget, the biggest heart, we managed to assemble a team of people that gave everything they had. And we got to the playoff final at Wembley, and we're 2-0 up at half-time.
To make it into the championship.
Which is unheard of for a team where we come from. And the chairman of the other club said to me at half-time, "Eop, lad," because he was from North. He said, "You're much better than us." And we were. But a mistake by a goalkeeper and a wonder strike from 35 yards ended at 2-2. And despite leading 3-2 on penalties, we got beat in the playoff. And then an Italian billionaire just happened to pass by, as they do. A man who wanted toy, I suppose, and didn't have the passion that I had, but certainly was going to put in a lot more money than I would ever. And in the interest of everyone, I thought, now's the time to take his trousers down. And it was funny because, I don't know if there's any Italians here, he's a nice guy. I mean, he brings his mum to the meetings, which was a bit of a worry. So we do a deal that I'm very, very happy with. But, you know, sometimes in business, you always feel there's another level to go. You can think there's an edge a little bit more. So we've done the deal, and I said, I want more. Which I didn't really want more, actually. And he said, no. And I said, no, no, I need more. So give me a table of 10 in the boardroom for the rest of my life, because my father-in-law likes going, and so do I. So I took a table for 10 for the rest of my life. I said, and give me 2 car parking spots in the small underground car park, because it's tough to park in the streets at Leighton. It's tough to find a car when you park in the streets of Leighton.
Well, with wheels.
With wheels.
Yeah.
So I got that, and I said, and just in case you're successful, give me a few $1 million bonuses for promotion and et cetera. And he gave me that. I thought, this is going rather well. So because I'm a lucky face, and it's better, as you know, from the rule of life before, it's better to be born lucky than good looking. I took a coin out of my pocket and said, why don't we have a little bit of fun on this, Francesco? I'll toss you for $1 million. And he nearly f***ed himself. And I said, the trouble with you Italians, so it's like the Second World War, mate. All your tanks had 4 reverse gears and 1 forward. But to his credit, he stood his ground and he wouldn't toss the coin, which is a shame because you know I'm unbeatable. Unfortunately, he put a lot of money in, a huge amount of money, more than I would have put in, and we got relegated the year after, which is a shame. But I think, like everything else, I don't criticise that. He's learned his lessons, he's paying his way, and they've got a decent team this year, and hopefully we'll get promotion and the journey will start again. And that's the interest in sport. We're always part of a journey. We're never the finished deal. But actually, we don't want it to finish, do we? The soap opera of sport lives on. And we're all happy to be part of that journey. But most important of all, you have to look in the mirror and tell yourself the truth. There are certain times where... It's a bit like I was in Vegas a few years ago and I talk in the mirror to myself all the time. It's the only time I get a sensible conversation. And I said to myself, you know, all you do is talk about having a tattoo, Bazza, and you've never, you know, go and get a tattoo. You want a tattoo. So I went and got a tattoo.
Where?
I can describe it. It's a heart. Don't need to show it. It's a heart with flames coming out. And underneath it says the word family. And every morning I get up, I'll kiss my family before I go to work. That's the commitment. But you have to know when it's your day to go. And so this is a situation in my family, because my family is everything, as I'm sure your family is to you. My decisions are made, my big decisions are made over lunch on Sunday. Lunch on Sunday is the entire family every Sunday, as my lunch was with my grandparents, my people. My father died very early, but my grandparents, every Sunday. There is no exceptions if we're in the country. So the lunchtime decision, when this was going on about Orient, was me, my daughter, my son, and my wife. And I said, look, mad Italian's come in, wants to give me millions of dollars. I can keep the ground, I've got the table, we can still go to the Orient, he's going to spend a load of money. I think it's right for the club, but it's not my decision. I don't have a vote in these meetings. I said to my son, what should I do? He said, Dad, we have some great times down there. He said, we've had so much fun. When you win, there's nothing quite like it. It's okay. I put that down as we don't sell. I said to my daughter, Katie, what should we do? She said, Dad, we love you, but when you die, please don't leave us with this club round our neck. I said, okay, I'm going to call it 1-1. And now the decision rests with she who must be obeyed. My wife was eating her dinner. She looked up, she said, get rid. She carried on. The club was sold on a 2-1 vote. But it don't stop us being fans. And it shouldn't stop us being fans. It's home is where the heart is. But the football club will be a really big part of your heart, as you will enjoy football and the expansion of American football over the next few years. And you deserve it just for your enthusiasm and your support for this venture. Thank you so much.
Family.
What a gent Barry Hearn is. What a ledge, as Rebecca Lowe would say. And talking about Rebecca Lowe, we had the honour of inviting her into the panic room to film the Men in Blazers half-season review, which will air on December the 28th at 6 o'clock. And I'm sorry, also at 10:30. So be warned, if you don't want to watch it, it could catch you blindly twice, and I wouldn't want anyone to experience that. She's fantastic. We're suboptimal. But on the 28th on NBCSN, it's the Men in Blazers show. Courage.